Good evening. In the news tonight, President Obama is in Japan at the G7 summit. The New York City Council passes the Criminal Justice Reform Act. Advocates for prison reform and city council members gather on the steps of City Hall for more ATI funding, more funding for alternatives to incarceration programs. And consumer advocates are calling for labeling of genetically modified foods. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Thursday, May 26, 2016. President Barack Obama says world leaders are rattled by the Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump.
Even those countries that are critical of us, even those countries that complain or question particular policy decisions that we make, know that ultimately things don't hold together so well if the United States is not making good decisions, and count on us to provide a certain level of stability and direction in meeting global challenges. So they are paying very close attention to this election. I think it's fair to say that they are surprised by the Republican nominee. They are not sure how seriously to take some of his pronouncements, but they're rattled by him. And for good reason, because a lot of the proposals that he's made display either ignorance of world affairs or a cavalier attitude or an interest in getting tweets and headlines instead of actually thinking through what it is that is required to keep America safe and secure and prosperous, and what's required to keep the world on an even keel.
Obama spoke to reporters from Japan, where he is meeting with the G7 leaders. Today, in the nation's capital, Code Pink held a silent vigil to protest the U.S. military's ongoing presence in Okinawa, Japan, and the crimes U.S. military personnel have been committing against the island's women for more than 70 years. The vigil was held in silence to reflect the silence felt by women across the world because of violence perpetrated by staff of U.S. military bases, this in countries they occupy. And over the weekend at the Left Forum here in New York City, there was a panel on comfort women. These are the women and girls forced into sexual slavery by the Japanese Army during World War II. Catherine April Waters reports.
During World War II, about 200,000 Asian women were kidnapped and taken to military camps by the Japanese Army to provide soldiers with sex. Suzanne Jay, who is with Asian Women Coalition Ending Prostitution, a transnational feminist organization, told me. She said it was a way of trying to control the men. The idea was to break the spirit of the women. Rape during war is a common way of doing that. Jay also said that this is an urgent issue now because even though most of the women have died, some are still alive and they're in their 80s and 90s. And yet the women have managed to capture some attention. Jay is worried the story of the comfort women will be relegated to history and forgotten. The comfort women are raising the issue to get people to pay more attention to forced prostitution around military bases. In this time of increased militarization, it's important that we can defend the women who were recruited to service the soldiers, Jay told me. It's very common today. In every naval base around the world, you'll find a strip bar area. I spoke with Suzanne Jay at the Left Forum in New York City over the weekend, where her organization and another group called Affirm, AF, the number 3, IRM, held a panel on the comfort women to raise the issue of prostitution around military bases. Yoko Akawa, who was another panelist and spoke also from the Asian Women Coalition Ending Prostitution, is a social worker from Japan who works with women escaping violence. She says Japanese imperialism began with the invasion of neighboring countries around 1900. Akawa said she thought it ended and then realized imperialism encompasses a wide range of injustices, like nationalism, militarism, racism, and sexism are also aspects surrounding the comfort women. She says the survival rate of comfort women is very small and that the women are forced into silence. Akawa says the Japanese public rationalizes the rape and sympathizes with the soldiers, so it's the comfort women who are the forgotten women. They are part of the largest case of human trafficking in the 21st century. It's the second largest industry in the world after arms deals. I am Catherine April Waters for WBAI News, New York.
Meanwhile, President Obama visits Hiroshima on Friday, the first U.S. sitting president to visit Hiroshima, where some 140,000 people died when U.S. forces dropped the first atomic bomb in 1945, leading to the end of World War II. Anti-nuclear groups have urged him to use the visit to offer new concrete steps to rid the world of nuclear weapons. This while the U.S., the first and only country to use nuclear weapons on people, plans to spend more than $300 billion to upgrade its nuclear stockpiles. Greenpeace says Obama's message in Hiroshima rings hollow without far bolder efforts to rid the world of nuclear weapons. Hisaya Takada, deputy program director at Greenpeace in Japan, says if the U.S. wants to help build a peaceful world, it's not enough to only visit the ruins of the past. And today, New York City's War Resisters League and other organizations demonstrated at the UN's Isaiah Wall. They called for the abolition of all nuclear weapons, beginning with the U.S., all other nuclear weapon states to immediately begin dismantling their weapons, an apology from the U.S. to the people of Japan, reparations to the victims of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombings over 70 years ago, and the anti-nuclear groups want the U.N. to pass a resolution making the possession of nuclear weapons a crime against humanity. In other news, there's a small possibility of a Donald Trump-Bernie Sanders debate heading into the crucial June 7th California primary. On ABC's Jimmy Kimmel Live, Trump said he'd be happy to engage Sanders in a one-on-one debate, as long as significant money goes to charity. Sanders tweeted, "Game on. I look forward to debating Donald Trump in California before the June 7th primary." Even though this would be an incredibly interesting debate to watch, campaign pundits say chances of a Sanders-Trump debate are slim. In New York City news, the New York City Council passed a set of bills on Wednesday which can reduce the penalties for broken window-style offenses.
This is an incredible step forward.
New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito speaking about the Criminal Justice Reform Act.
This is probably one of the more comprehensive bills on this kind of reform that has been proposed. I'm very much believe it's going to be helpful to many thousands of people, many of my constituents. It's much more fairness in the system, which is what we've talked about. And this is part of a larger conversation that we've had in this council when we look at Rikers and other matters to create equity. And again, conversations continue on other matters. But this is nothing to laugh at. This is a very substantive package of reform and bills that we're presenting here. And it really goes a long way. And I'm hoping that other cities will take a look at it. We have a lot of work to do nationally in the conversation of criminal justice reform.
The bills give the NYPD the option of issuing civil rather than criminal summonses for low-level broken window offenses. These include open container of alcohol, littering, public urination, being in the park at night, and unreasonable noise. Queens Council member Rory Lantzman.
The fine would get converted to, at some point, a civil judgment, and you would be walking around with a civil judgment against you. I would point out that even currently, for people who go through the criminal justice system and go through criminal court, 99.9% or 99.6% of the cases that resolve are fines. The other consequence for people who don't show up at all in criminal court is that a warrant will be issued for their arrest, and that is certainly more dramatic than in the civil system, where you would just get maybe an additional fine and a civil judgment. but I think in our judgment, that punishment far outweighs the conduct and the amount of energy, time, resources that the police department and the court system have to divert to deal with those outstanding warrants are not justified by the harm that's being committed.
The City Council estimates that this change would affect almost 10,000 people yearly. These are people convicted of misdemeanors who each year were given permanent criminal records for low-level offenses. Now with these bills, this will no longer be the case. These offenses won't be misdemeanors, but civil violations. Speaker Vivedito.
So right now, with biking on the sidewalk, I think is a prime example. Right now, a police officer has the discretion of treating it criminally, right, in terms of criminal summons, or treating it in terms of a civil summons. And so the NYPD has been training officers and really encouraging officers to give the civil summons, right, in that situation. We're doing the same here. Yes, they do have both options still available to them. There is going to be a level of guidance and training provided to the NYPD to encourage, right, officers to use the civil option and take that and divert that to civil court and process through oath as opposed to going to criminal. And I think that that's what we're talking about, the 10,000 individuals that will be impacted, meaning positively, because now they don't have that situation where they'll have a criminal record, where you're talking about 100,000 cases, right, that will be taken out of the criminal courts. And so this is really, really incredible, the impact. And 50,000 projected 50,000 warrants, less warrants, that will be issued for these specific violations.
And the speaker says the City Council will continue to engage in a dialogue with Commissioner Bratton and the NYPD. She says she has had trouble with the broken windows approach to policing.
And I think that we're definitely indicating that the way that has been implemented up to now, these low-level nonviolent offenses, just has created distrust in communities. I think it's been dispensed in a way that unnecessarily impacts and unjustly impacts communities of color. And low-income communities in particular. And so this is about creating a more equal playing field.
One of the broken windows low-level offenses on the list is unreasonable noise. So how is this measured regarding protests around the city? New York City Council member from Manhattan, Yadonis Rodriguez.
When it comes to protest, to any protest, like, you know, we always go and get a sound permit. Also, when we don't have a sound permit, we have the right to be in the sidewalk if we are not using any sound permit. So I believe that that's part of the First Amendment right that we have. These bills, they have nothing to do with the First Amendment right, and we will keep using our First Amendment right.
Mayor Bill de Blasio is expected to sign the bills which comprise the Criminal Justice Reform Act. In other news, consumer advocates were in Albany on Tuesday before the legislative session ends, urging passage of a bill to require labeling of genetically modified foods. Andrea Sears reports.
The advocates maintain the bill has the support of a majority of the assembly and is sponsored by almost half of the senators. Alex Beecham with Food and Water Watch says there's no reason lawmakers shouldn't bring the bill up for a vote now.
I think we're closer than we've ever been to passing it, but we really need a commitment from leadership to get this bill done before the legislative session ends, which is now just a few weeks away.
The food industry opposes GMO labeling, saying the food is perfectly safe and labeling would only raise costs and confuse consumers. But polls indicate that more than 90% of Americans want GMO foods to be labeled. Connecticut and Maine have passed GMO labeling laws, but they only go into effect when neighboring states pass similar laws. Now, Beecham says, the pivotal state in the push for labeling laws is Vermont.
They've passed a GMO labeling law that goes into effect this July, and that's really kind of changed the game. I think you see momentum on our side and more and more people speaking up and taking action.
Some food producers, such as Campbell's Soups, are voluntarily labeling their products that contain genetically modified organisms. According to Beecham, the New York bill, like the law in Vermont, would allow producers and retailers to use GMO or genetically engineered on packaging to meet the labeling requirements.
The key thing is just that consumers have the ability to choose and say, okay, this is genetically engineered and this product over here isn't. And right now that's really lacking in the marketplace.
The current legislative session comes to an end on June 16th. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Oil giants Chevron and Exxon at their annual shareholders meeting drew a coalition of activists on Wednesday concerned with environmental protection, climate change, human rights, as well as liability for the oil company's actions in Ecuador's rainforest. Pacifica Radio's Corinne Smith reports.
Activists attended the meeting as proxy shareholders to question Chevron's international commercial operations, as well as oppose its investments in fracking and climate change denying science and policy. In what many call the environmental trial of the century, Chevron was found liable for $9.5 billion in environmental damages in Ecuador's rainforest. That's $11 billion with interest. Humberto Piahuaje is an indigenous leader of the Sequoia peoples of Ecuador's northern Amazon rainforest.
Esa justicia ya se dio en el Ecuador.
We already won a judgment in Ecuador. However, Chevron is refusing to comply with that sentence. We've been on this fight for 22 years and 6 months, but still Chevron refuses to listen. It seems that Chevron may just be waiting for all of its victims to die, and that way they cannot have any punishment. Our hope is that through the shareholder meeting today, Chevron shareholders will see through its lies, and they'll see that the company left behind a huge amount of contamination in the Ecuadorian Amazon. People are still dying and suffering from that.
Chevron refused to pay, so Ecuador brought the legal action to Canada, where the Supreme Court voted unanimously to allow debt collections from Chevron's Canadian assets. Chevron Public Affairs Officer Morgan Crinklaw.
The lawsuit against Chevron in Ecuador is a fraud. There is cleanup that needs to be done, and it is the responsibility of PetroEcuador, the state-owned oil company, and the government of Ecuador.
The Union of Concerned Scientists last year published a report that details how Chevron, Exxon, and industry front groups have, for decades, worked to deceive the public about climate science and the catastrophic effects burning fossil fuels has on the environment. Deborah Moore with the Union of Concerned Scientists explained to KPFA the response her group received when they questioned oil executives about their company's history of climate deception.
The answer we got was, well, we don't do original scientific research, and we're talking not about science, we're talking about policy.
In San Ramon, I'm Corinne Smith, KPFA Pacifica.
But there is some indication that the tide is changing. More mainstream Exxon Chevron investors are starting to take the threat of global warming from fossil fuels more seriously. A resolution calling for stress tests to determine the risk that efforts to curb climate change pose to their businesses was voted down at the shareholders meeting, but only by a narrow margin. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York.
More education, less incarceration. More education, less incarceration. More education, less incarceration.
At a spirited rally on the steps of City Hall Wednesday, advocates for criminal justice reform gathered with ATI Reentry Coalition members. They called for additional funding for ATI, Alternatives to Incarceration. Bronx City Council member Vanessa Gibson.
I want to thank the entire ATI coalition and all of our advocacy groups for the work you do every day. You save lives. You give our young men and women a second chance at life, an opportunity. That's right. You give our young men and women an opportunity to be a success story and not a statistic. And we recognize that education and prevention is the way to go. More education, more prevention, and less detention. It is unacceptable that in this day and age, it costs more to incarcerate a young person. We need to make sure that we create jobs and not jails.
Build people, not prisons.
That's right, building up people and not prisons.
Proponents are looking for a $1 million investment from the city in Alternatives to Incarceration. Queens Council Member Danny Drum.
You know, I was one of the first council members to call for the close of Rikers Island, because I witnessed firsthand, before some of the changes that have been put into place, what goes on in Rikers Island. And through a number of visits that I made, including to the solitary confinement units where people died because it was too hot or because nobody cared about them, I know firsthand that we must take every measure possible to avoid sending people to that hellhole.
That's right.
It is hell on earth in Rikers. And we need to ensure our young people a second chance, or sometimes a third chance, or even more, to make it in society and to have those opportunities. So by providing ATI programs, alternatives to incarceration, we are giving those opportunities. And I also want to comment about something that's in this plan as well, which is reentry programs. There are very few residences for people who are coming out of the state prisons to reenter into society. These folks need help. If you've been away for 25 years and you never held a cell phone in your hands, how are you going to be able to survive and pay your rent and open a bank account and get yourself started up with a job unless you have some real supports in place? So we need, in this city council, to continue to support ATI and reentry programs. You have my commitment to stand in solidarity with you. Thank you very, very much.
Wednesday would have been Khalif Browder's birthday. He committed suicide after spending time at Rikers, 2 years in solitary.
It's beyond tragic, you know? So I'm hoping that the powers that be and the communities at large, it's a wake-up call, you know, for them to get involved and make sure that we don't have any more tragic incidents like that again.
Asade Bello is director of the Brooklyn Justice Corps. It works with young people aged 18 to 24 who've had a history of criminal justice involvement.
We're always looking for more funding and expansion of our programming. If the city can dedicate almost up to $250,000 a year to incarcerate a youth, they definitely can put the funding in other places where it's going to be more effective for the youth.
Justin LeBron is a 19-year-old from the Bronx who is helped by ATI programs.
Well, it's important for me because, well, you know, being a successful member of society, you know, you would want to be out here and to be able to experience the things that other people get to experience, you know. Being my age, you know, there's a lot of obstacles, you know, people have to overcome. And I think it's only right that schools, you know, should stay open and educate, you know, the younger youth, you know what I'm saying? Because not everybody makes mistakes, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't, you know, show the person you are by your mistake.
Signs on the steps of City Hall read, ATI programs need your support. For more information, go to ati-ny.org. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. NYPD, get out of my face. I got a right to a public space. This was the chant by homeless New Yorkers as they protested police actions in downtown Manhattan today. Over this past year, homeless New Yorkers have witnessed their photos and other personal belongings confiscated and thrown away by the NYPD. The NYCLU filed a complaint with NYC's Human Rights Commission Thursday. It says the NYPD violates people's rights by threatening them and ordering them to move along in public spaces. The complaint says police in East Harlem have threatened or arrested homeless people who have not broken the law. It also says the neighborhood lacks drop-in centers that homeless people could use to get off the streets. The mayor's office says the city respects the right of our homeless New Yorkers and has a comprehensive plan to reduce homelessness. It says it will review the complaint by the New York Civil Liberties Union. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Thursday, May 26, 2016. The news was produced with Andrea Sears of the New York News Connection and April Waters. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York. Now stay tuned for our live segment where you can call in after the news with your concerns and your thoughts about anything you heard on our newscast.